Each time before I speak, I have one prayer. Lord, help me to be as funny as Kerry. Not really. My name is Steve. I always feel like I should say something else. Like Carly says, for those of you that are new here, my name is Carly, I'm a pastor here. I say, my name is Steve. I'm just a bloke. So, my father-in-law has missing fingers. He worked in a lumber mill, missing parts of his fingers anyway. Let's not make it too exciting. He's missing the ends of his fingers because he worked in a sawmill and he worked with wood and he chopped a lot of wood and he chopped his fingers several times. I think there's some story about he got an award or the whole company got an award for the number of days without any injury and he chopped his finger off on the same day or something like that. So it wasn't long after Christiane and I met that I was working, we were in YWAM and I was working for the maintenance team and Jacob was a little baby and Jacob wasn't sleeping. And I think what happened was I was cutting the bottom, just trimming a door down. And I was cutting the bottom off the door and I think I fell asleep as I was doing it. And my fingers curled underneath and I ended up chopping the pads off these fingers. And right? And everyone's like, yeah, so what? We're Canadian, this happens all the time. We went to the hospital, and I think pretty much 4 days later, I actually got my fingers stitched back together again. Okay, a few years passed, and we moved to Canada. So that was in the UK. We moved to Canada, and I'm planting a tree in the front yard, and it's one of those biodegradable pots. So I dug a hole, put the pot in the ground, read the instructions. The instruction says cut the top off. Round the top of the pot so that it can get water correctly. So I got an X-Acto knife and I'm cutting away, cutting towards your body, right? That's what you're meant to do with an X-Acto knife. Cut towards yourself. And eventually it let go and I almost chopped my thumb off, let's just put it that way. And it was one of those really good accidents where you could actually see my heart beating, right? So I was, we were actually living next door to Christiane's parents at the time, and Christiane's mom is a nurse, and I said, can you please bandage it up for me? I can't spend 4 days in hospital to get this fixed up. My parents were visiting at the time. Christiane's dad took me to the hospital. Christiane was at a church meeting at the time, and before the end of the church meeting, I was back home with my hand bandaged. That's the difference between the UK health system and the Canadian health system. I know which I prefer. And this morning we're talking about universal healthcare. We're in a series here where we're talking about epiphany, which means the revealing. What does the Bible reveal about who Jesus is? The series is called The Big Reveal, and this is the sixth Sunday after Epiphany. Next week is the Transfiguration Sunday, followed by the season of Lent. So we're in the church calendar here. We're the sixth Sunday after Epiphany. It doesn't mean anything special, right? There's no specific passage that you need to go to on the sixth Sunday after Epiphany. But what we're talking about, as we've been talking about throughout this whole series, is what does God reveal about himself as we read the scriptures? What does the Bible reveal about Jesus? And this morning, we're in Jesus' first ever sermon. Now, this sermon, when you're reading this passage in Matthew, it's called the Sermon on the Mount. When you read the passage in Luke, it's called the Sermon on the Plain. And when I mentioned that to Christiane the other day, she looked at me funny like, fairly sure there weren't any planes in the time of Jesus. Joke's on you because it's in the Bible. So why do we have different things? Why do we have different interpretations? Why does Matthew depict things in a certain way and Luke depicts them in a slightly different way? Because they're writing to different audiences. And what's really important to know about Luke's gospel, he starts it off with telling us specifically who he's writing it to. Most excellent Theophilus. Now, I don't actually know who Theophilus was. I don't know if anybody necessarily does, but he wasn't Jewish. He was a Gentile. So that's what's key about Luke's gospel, is that he's not writing to a Jewish audience. Matthew was writing to a Jewish audience. So Luke, as he's telling this story, as he gets to what we call the Sermon on the Plain, Jesus' first ever sermon, he's very positive, right? Everything that Luke depicts about Jesus' life to this point is very much based around the Jewish nation. And it's healing miracles, and it's casting out of demons. But he reveals something new about Jesus as he gets to this passage. So we're going to read together. It's going to come up on the screen. It's in Luke chapter 6, and I'm going to start at verse 17. And he came down with them and stood on a level place, that's the plain, with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the seacoast of Tyre and Sidon, who came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. And all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came out from him and healed them all. And he lifted his eyes on his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you shall laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, and when they exclude you and revile you and spurn your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For so their fathers did to the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you shall be hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. Woe to you when all people speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the false prophets." So what does Luke reveal about Jesus? Well, this isn't the first time that there's a healing in Luke's gospel, but this is the first time when Gentiles are involved. And I've got to point out now, the reason that this is important, the reason that it's important for us is because we are Gentiles. So this was the extension of God's blessing to the whole world. We're told in verse 17 that Jesus was amongst a multitude of people. They were from Judea and Jerusalem. Well, Jerusalem's in Judea. And people from Tyre and Sidon. And Tyre and Sidon are in modern-day Lebanon, right? So these people were not Jewish people. There was a whole multitude of Jews and Gentiles which gathered together to hear him and be healed of their diseases. And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. So that's an interesting turn of events, because I think when we think about healing, we think about a physical healing. And many of those people in that multitude were healed physically. But we're also told that those that were troubled by unclean spirits were cured. Jesus was healing sick people and those people who were spiritually sick. So we're not talking here, we're not talking about demon possession, which we've already covered, right? Chapter 5, Luke's already covered by this point. He did cast a demon out of somebody. But in this passage here, we're talking about a healing that is both physical and spiritual. If you think of elsewhere, where there's the potential that a troubling spirit could cause a physical ailment in somebody. We've got this story after the Mount of Transfiguration. Jesus comes down from the mountain after his disciples. The disciples are there at the foot of the mountain, and there's this child with epilepsy that keeps throwing himself into the fire, keeps having a seizure and throwing himself into the fire. And the disciples can't do anything for him, right? They've tried to heal him, but they can't do anything for him. And Jesus comes along and he heals the boy. And the question that the disciples have is, why couldn't we do this? What did you do differently that we couldn't do? And Jesus has rebuked an evil spirit. right? He didn't just make the child well. He rebuked an evil spirit. And he says to the disciples, the reason that you couldn't do this is because of your lack of faith. So the conclusion that we have to take from passages like this is that some sickness is caused by evil, the troubling of an evil spirit. Some illness is physical, some is mental. Healing can be spiritual as much as it can be physical. And I think quite often today we either underestimate that or we overstate it. That we can put too much emphasis on spiritual troubling, spiritual sickness that comes from the enemy. And we can put, or we can say, well, no, that doesn't happen today. Whereas what Jesus was covering here was right in the middle of all that. Jesus would treat somebody if they were struggling spiritually. He would treat somebody if they were struggling physically. And quite often the two coincided. But as Jesus is talking to this multitude of people, in verse 19 it says that they sought to touch him, for power came out from him. What would that look like? I don't know, right? It could have been like that. I don't really know what it looked like, but there was power. And this was something that drew people to Jesus. There was something that was amazing about this experience. And we're told that he healed them all. Right? So not just the Jews. Not just the people with obvious physical ailments. He healed everybody that was there. He healed a multitude of people in one go. I'm not entirely sure what that would look like, just that we are told that after this event, everybody was healed. The word cure means to make whole. Jesus made the whole multitude whole, including Gentiles. So this was a bit of a bomb drop, right? This event that Jesus was a part of here was just something that would have been mind-blowing to those around him, right? I think sometimes we can read this because we've read it before, and it becomes just normal. Like, yeah, we know that kind of stuff can happen. We know that God does that kind of stuff. But just imagine being there in this first time when something of this magnitude has happened, especially as you're surrounded by Gentiles. That's got to be mind-blowing. That's got to be something completely new that people had never experienced before. This was a bomb drop to the Israelite nation. Jesus wasn't just healing people on the Sabbath, which was unheard of. Jesus was healing people of everything, of all their suffering. He was literally making everyone whole who touched him. This was unheard of in Israel. This was unheard of in the world at this point. So he goes from this bomb drop, this amazing event that's happened where everybody's made whole, to a mic drop because he preaches his first sermon. And this sermon is not short, right? Let's just be clear about the length of sermons that Jesus preached. They were long. Just feel a blessing as I only speak for 45 minutes. But Jesus starts off this sermon. He says he lifted up his eyes on his disciples. Well, who's he talking to here? Who are the disciples of Jesus at this point? Because this is just after the calling of the apostles. So this could be the 12, right? Except that something has happened to the multitude at this point. They've been made whole. Well, part of being made whole is that you now are a follower of Jesus. You can't be whole without being a follower of Jesus, a disciple of Jesus. So when Jesus lifted up his eyes to his disciples, we're talking about the multitude, because part of being whole is to be a disciple of Jesus. And he launches into this this message about who is blessed and who isn't blessed. And the way that Luke does it, he does the four blessings and he does the four woes. So let's just look at them side by side here. The first thing that Jesus says is, blessed are those who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who are poor. But woe to you who are rich, for you've already received your consolation. In other words, you're already living your best life as far as you're concerned. And there is nothing that I can do to change that. This is the life you've chosen. This is the life that you're going to stick with. Jesus says, blessed are you if you're poor, because then you've got a choice. But if you're rich, you don't really see it as a choice. You already got it made. Why would you be looking for anything else? You are self-made. But if you're poor, you're looking for something else. You're looking for fulfillment. Blessed. Let's just think about the rich young ruler there, right? So we've got that passage in, that Matthew covers about the guy that says, that goes to Jesus, says, I've lived a perfect life. What else do I need to do? Jesus says, just sell everything and give it to the poor. And we assume, because we don't actually know who this guy is, and normally he would have been given a name if he was known to the church. So we assume that this guy didn't sell all of his stuff and give it to the poor, right? Because that was his God. That was his thing, was his riches. That was his identity. The second thing Jesus says, blessed are you who are hungry now, for you shall be satisfied. But woe to you who are full now, for you shall be hungry. And Paul covers this in Philippians 3:19. He says, their end is destruction because their God is their stomach. So Jesus is saying, if you're hungry, there's a wanting for more. If you feel full, you don't need anything else. Again, you're satisfied with the state that you're in. You're satisfied with the point that you've got to. Jesus is like, be poor, be hungry. Okay, this is a little bit different to how the world sees things. And he goes on, because he goes, blessed are you who weep now, for you shall laugh. But woe to you who laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. When's Jesus talking about? I think there's definitely an element of this is eschatological. This is something that's going to come at the end of time, because if you mourn now, then God is going to reveal his goodness with no more mourning and no more sadness, and something is going to be amazing and is going to be mind-blowing. But also, I think we have to look at Jesus at the Passion narrative as the soldiers are mocking him, laughing at him. Well, Jesus is saying, you can laugh now, but you will mourn for eternity. Blessed, okay, get this, blessed are you when people hate you. Interesting. And when they exclude you and revile you and spurn your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. But woe to you when all people speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the false prophets. And bearing in mind that that we as the audience, like Theophilus was, can read this in light of what we've already read in chapter 4. And in chapter 4, we've got that fantastic passage where Jesus goes from hero to zero in a matter of moments, because he stands up and he reads from the book of Isaiah, and it's talking about the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord being upon you, and he says, this is the fulfillment of this. I am the fulfillment of this. And it says in chapter 4, all spoke well of him and marveled at the gracious words that were coming from his mouth. Now, if I was Jesus, I would leave it at that point, because everybody's on your side. You've got favor with everybody. Walk away while you're winning, Jesus. But then he goes on to tell people, actually, salvation is coming to the Gentiles as well. And what do? They drive him out of the synagogue, and they take him to the top of the hill. They're about to push him off the top of the hill, and he walks in between them, because that wasn't his time. So Jesus says, verse 23, rejoice in that day. Rejoice in the day when people hate you. Okay? Leap for joy because people hate you. For behold, your reward is great in heaven, for so their fathers did to the prophets. So when's Jesus telling you to leap for joy? When you're being persecuted, when you are downtrodden, when people are mocking you for your faith? I think there's an element of hyperbole here, but what is Luke revealing about Jesus at this point? Jesus says, blessed are the poor, blessed are the hungry, blessed are the weeping, and blessed are the hated. But woe to the rich, the full, the self-content, and the popular. This is an interesting turn of events. This is on the back of a mass healing, right? So Jesus has healed a multitude of people, and now he's saying, you are blessed if you are not whole. There seems to be a bit of a discrepancy there in what Jesus is saying. Because what Jesus is talking about here, he's talking about the beginning of spiritual healing. In chapter 5, we've got the story which is probably well known amongst us all. It's the story of the paralyzed man who his friends want him to see Jesus. The house that Jesus is in is packed. They can't actually get him to Jesus, so they rip the ceiling, they rip the roof apart so they can lower him down to Jesus. And as they do that, and as this guy is laying on his mat before Jesus, Jesus says to him, "Your sins are forgiven." Do you think that that's why the friends brought the guy to see him? Was it so that he could have his sins forgiven? So as Jesus forgives this guy's sins, the Pharisees that are there go, "Blasphemy!" I got you listening. That woke anybody up. Who can forgive sins but God alone? And I think the disciples were like, "Yep, exactly. That is God." Maybe they didn't know at that point. So Jesus forgives his sins, and then he heals him, and the guy gets up, and he's able to walk out of this building. And I don't know who paid for the roof. So as a result of this, right, so this is the way that the passage is written. So this is the way I interpret it. It says that everybody, so that I think that includes the Pharisees, who were the ones that were accusing Jesus of blasphemy, that says that they were amazed and gave praise to God. That has to be the point of healing, of physical healing, to give God glory. So let me ask you this. What if Jesus had forgiven him his sins, but not healed him? Would that have been enough? See, when Jesus brought this healing to people, it was to bring about a wholeness. And in the physical healing, it revealed something about who he was. It revealed something, it helped people to recognize who Jesus was when he healed them physically. And what we read here is that the reason for this physical healing was to keep people around for long enough that they could receive spiritual healing. Spiritual healing is what Jesus is all about. Physical healing is just a bonus. If the expectation for wholeness is physical healing always, does God fall short? If this was prescriptive of all of church history for all life to come, that God would always bring physical healing, has God let us down? If we expect always physical healing, we're going to be disappointed with God. But here's the thing. Jesus says that the blessed are the poor, the hungry, those who are struggling, and those who are hated, those people who aren't popular. So that isn't a completeness. Jesus is saying, you are blessed when you're struggling, when you're not physically whole. They're all physical sufferings so that you can begin the process of spiritual healing. And when you look at those blessings that Luke describes here, Jesus fulfills them. Jesus says, foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but I have nowhere to lay, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus was poor. When Jesus is again preaching to a multitude of people, he uses a child's lunch to feed them all. You are hungry and you are hated like me. You are blessed if you're like me. So if Jesus is describing himself when he talks about the blessings, who's he describing when he talks about woe to the rich, to the full, to the content, to those that are popular with the world? Is he describing the Pharisees? Is he, as he's writing to a Gentile audience, maybe he's describing the Romans? Maybe by extension, he's can take place. What would it be like to be spiritually whole? To be spiritually complete? Well, it would be to be like Jesus. And that's the point that's being made here in Luke's gospel. When Jesus was healing people in the multitude, the point of his physical healing was to keep them around for long enough to recognize who he was, that he could provide spiritual healing for them. It was needed at that time for a specific purpose. So naturally, we have to go to, does God heal people physically today? And of course, we know that the answer to that is yes. It doesn't have to be miraculous, but certainly some people would attest that God has miraculously healed them. But this, I can promise you, that none of you will ever be physically whole. You will only get lower and slower. You are physically dying, but this is what Revelation says. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. For the former things have passed away. So no matter what life has for you now, the promise is of a future perfection. But there's only one way to get there, and that's spiritual. See, what Jesus showed to the multitude was a foretaste of what's to come, but then he led them spiritually. We can only get into the path of spiritual wholeness once we realize that we need it. And I hope that's why you're here this morning. Come and be broken with us. This is what we have in common. We recognize our need for Jesus. We recognize our need for spiritual healing. And what Jesus promises us is that we will find him when we seek him with our whole heart. Here's a passage from Jeremiah 17. Cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes his flesh his strength, whose heart turns away from the Lord. He's like a shrub in the desert and shall not see any good come. He shall dwell in the parched places of the wilderness in an uninhabited salt land. But blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. He's like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes. For its leaves remain green and is not anxious in a year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds. See, Jesus' promise to you this morning is that if you seek him, he will heal you. He will make you whole, but only when you put him first. And the step to putting him first is to admit that you are broken, even if the world tells you otherwise.